Hello and welcome to the Ice Guys. This is the show that takes you into the world of the National Hockey League. Every game, every day, from a betting perspective. With pro sports handicappers, Ian Cameron, Alex P. Smith, and various guests from the world of hockey and sports betting. And now, here's your host, Ian Cameron.
Welcome to the Ice Guys, presented by Boston Hemp Inc. Sunday, April 28th. Ian Cameron with you. Alex B. Smith under the weather today. He's in the chat, though. We hope he's feeling better soon. And joining us, as we talked about for the last couple days, first time on the show. Actually, this has been in the works for a while, but finally got him on the show. Former NHL pro hockey player as well, Jeremy Williams, making his Ice Guys show debut on this Sunday. Jeremy, it's good to have you here. What's up?
Thanks, Ian. I appreciate you having me out. And, you know, my wife does say I do procrastinate a little bit. So I apologize. It took so long for us to get together.
No, it's all right. It's all right. You've of course, retired last year. So you're probably thinking after hockey ended for you, where am I going to live career-wise? What am I going to do? You know, you've certainly got a wife. You know, you've got a family and all that. So things get busy. And I'm sure the last year, you know, coming out of the hockey part of your life, you know, it's been hectic. It's been busy. So no worries at all that it took a little while to get you on the show. And speaking of the hockey career, that's where we're going to begin this show, just to go back and look at Jeremy Williams in the hockey career. Your first we'll start in junior and then the transition to pro. But how did you fall in love with the game and how did it start for you starting in your junior ranks?
Well, I grew up in a small town in Saskatchewan. So, you know, the only thing we had to do was really watch Hockey Night in Canada and play hockey. You know, there wasn't a lot in terms of sports for us. So growing up as a kid, my dad would build us a rink, my brother and sister and I. So I was able to skate all the time and use my imagination to create situations and have a lot of fun out on the ice. And, you know, I never played AAA because we didn't have it really. So I played AA growing up and got seen by a few teams and ended up getting drafted into Swift Current. And after that, it really just became, you know, an obsession, so to speak. And I feel like anybody in pro sports, there's one thing that is kind of that unites them all. And it's an obsessive type of whether you call it work ethic or dedication to something. And that kind of took over. And I just love being on the ice. So playing in Swift Current was very special. And I got to play beside some great players, you know, Ben Andres, Ian White. And so it was really, I didn't realize the path I was on, you know. I was just, this is just my life sort of thing. So it was a really cool way to go about it and not really feeling stressed like nowadays players are.
You got to, of course, to don the colors of the Toronto Maple Leafs. Some still believe, even after last night, they are a storied franchise. We'll get to that in just a moment. But I know you got to play for the Toronto Maple Leafs briefly. You were in their organization, of course, with the Toronto Marlies. Just that experience, how was it for you? Probably amazing.
Well, I mean, you talk about who did I pretend to be out on the ice when I was skating out there. It was always, you know, Doug Gilmore, right? So a huge Leaf fan growing up. Surreal. And to bring it all full circle, last night I was actually able to go to the game. And I was sitting up in the alumni box and I was looking down and it's just like a flashback to being able to be in my first game and think back like, man, I came down the wall over here. I shot the puck here, you know, and just recreate that memory. It was, I've had a lot of those instances now that I've retired that you look back and you really can appreciate what you accomplished, even though, because in the moment, it's a whirlwind, right? And especially being in Toronto. So it was an incredible moment last night to be able to go back to Toronto and see where it all began.
And Paul Maurice was the coach of the Leafs at that time when you were there. Was that true?
My first game was Pat Quinn, actually.
Oh my gosh, Pat Quinn. Yeah, rest so in peace.
My first game was Ty's last, Ty Domi's last.
Yeah. Yeah. There you go. We have Pat Quinn. What an incredible run, of course, the Leafs had with him as a head coach there. Just an outstanding man. And again, we lost him too soon. Yeah, of course, when you played for the Leafs, they were going through transition, of course. That was just around the time, I think, when they were trying to – they had all those big contracts of the guys that had been there forever with McCabe and Sundin and Tucker, and they called it the Muskoka Five, I remember. That right around that time. So that was basically a transition part of the for the team at that time, because they had a great run in the 90s, early in the 2000s when they were just always in the playoffs, and they got to the conference finals one year. And of course, I think you ended up getting into about 30 or so games with the Leafs, and of course played down with the Marlies. Then you went to the Rangers organization for a bit, Hartford Wolfpack, New York Rangers. You were in that organization. Then you made the decision to go over to Europe, where you played a lot there, especially over in Germany. I mean, you're basically probably, I assume, Jeremy, going to repeat what a lot of the players on this show that played in Europe have said right here on this show, that the experience, they wouldn't have traded it for anything. It's just fun. It's just been something different. You get to see a different part of the world. How about that European playing experience for you? I'm sure you share the same sentiments.
You're exactly right. It was such an incredible, it was very eye-opening too, right? That we're so focused on our own lives and like, this is the way things are and this is how life should be lived. And, you know, especially being in Ontario since I've been, you know, 21 years old, it's just, you're expecting this is the way life is supposed to be lived. And going to Europe gives you a very clear understanding that not only is the world a lot older everywhere else, right? Like you step inside some buildings that have been standing for thousands of years and things like that, but hockey is growing everywhere. And, you know, the German, especially I played in Sweden. It speaks for itself, right? With Swedish hockey players and the development of their players is fantastic. I was actually in Nick Lidstrom's hometown, so I got to play with his son a little bit. But Germany itself, right? That's just when they won the silver medal. I'm sorry, they should have won the gold, but they did get silver, right? So a huge accomplishment for German hockey. And it's kind of a hybrid style of European, where it's like more skill, but also a little bit grittier of a league. So it was a really nice place to be.
Yeah, exactly. And like I say, you played on the DEL, Straubing, the Tigers there. Most of the years you played there in Germany. We've actually talked with a few players from that league that have played over there and played in that league for a few years. The big difference, right, is the wider ice, right? Was that an adjustment at the very beginning for you?
My first year to Europe almost retired me. It was as a goal scorer, you know, I wasn't the greatest skater, and I wasn't somebody that was like skating all over the ice to create opportunities. I was more of a stationary player that found openings and had a knack for finding the net. And so my first year I played for Red Bull in Salzburg with Pierre Paget, who is a genius when it comes to coaching strategy, but it wasn't very genius for me. And it was a very, based on the skills that I had, it was something that just didn't work out for me. Combined with an injury was very difficult. After that, I knew what I needed to do to become better. I got with Kelly Reed, who's a fantastic skating coach out in this area, in the Hamilton area. He's well known by everybody. And I worked with him for one summer and with a different trainer. And it was like, I went to Sweden. And so to go to play in a place where you talk about big ice, now your fourth line can skate in Sweden, no matter what level. And so, once I got my skating down, European hockey became a lot easier because it's wider. It's, you got to take a few extra strides to beat a guy. It's a couple extra strides off the wall to get into a scoring position. And, everybody's skilled and everybody can skate out there. So it, you know, if I can give any advice, I know this isn't an advice show on what to do, but skating is so
important. Well, it is. It's betting advice. But yeah, hockey advice is fine too. Absolutely. Yeah. We allow that for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. So skating was definitely the biggest contributing factor to whether or not you can play in Europe, you know, outside of a select few.
Yeah, no doubt. And you also have to be very good defensively and responsible, I find, over there. Especially, I know the Swedish league, they're like, if you're not going to play both sides of the ice, both sides of the puck, you're going to have trouble sticking in that league. Yeah. And playing, it's simple as that. And that's something I know that a lot of our guests that we've had that have played over there have said, no question. The decision to hang up the skates, was it obvious that it was, hey, it's time. You know, it's time to move on to other things. Was there some consternation when it came time to say, we're retiring from hockey? Was the decision easy for you, or was it difficult?
Well, it was goodbye. My wife and I had talked about it. Short backstory. I have three little girls, three beautiful little girls and a beautiful wife. And my first daughter was born in Germany. The other two were born in the off season. So they were born here, at McMaster University. And, it gave a lot to us. Right. But it was also taking three kids, especially for my wife to follow my dream and things like that. It's a lot, right? And it was, they're my biggest fans, and she's been my biggest fan since we met. But it was always in talks that were like, okay, the kids are starting to be in school. What do we want to do here? You're 37, you're 38, you know, and so when I played in Hellbrunn my final 2 years, it was kind of like,
don't make it sound bad, man. I'm the same age, 38. Don't make it sound so bad. We're still young pups here. Let's go. Let's have some positivity here.
I'm standing beside kids that are like 17. It becomes a little strange. So, coupled with a season that wasn't very enjoyable, as well as needing a knee surgery that left me off my feet for a few months, it was definitely a time that was placed well. It was good timing for me, and I don't miss it. I miss playing. I shouldn't say that. I miss hockey. I love being on the ice, but I don't miss playing professionally. And so I know it was time to go. And between my wife and I, it was the right decision to move home and start our life after hockey and be with family.
It's funny you mention Mrs. your wife here, because I had heard the name Ashley Leggett. I had heard the name Ashley Leggett years ago, and some advertisement, because she does some acting. I know that. There's no question. And just happened when we first started chatting here, I'm like, holy shit, you're married to her. There we go. You did well.
Yeah, some say one of us overachieved. I don't know. It's still up in the air.
No, that's awesome. And now you've got a great family. And like I say, you've transitioned now to life after hockey. That's great. We certainly wish you all the best with that. But before we wrap up the part of the show talking about Jeremy Williams and his hockey past, it's what we always do with the guest for the first time, and they don't expect it. We go to the highlight reel. We go to the vault. Ooh. And we find some Jeremy Williams highlights that anything we can find. And we just happen to find one of the moments in his 30 or so games with the Toronto Maple Leafs where this guy right here, Jeremy Williams, found the back of the net. So this was December 2008, against a team that's not even a franchise anymore, Jeremy, in the NHL, the Atlanta Thrashers. So here it is.
Blake trying to get it in over the line with Dominic Moore. Blake takes it into the corner. Leafs are changing their defense, so Blake doesn't have much of an option other than this to play it back of the net. There's Moore, but a shot scores! Williams again with another tremendous release, and the Maple Leafs have the lead.
On Kari Lehtinen, remember him? Goaltender for Atlanta. What a wonderful shot that was. You got back when Joe Bowen called the games on television much of the time for the Leafs as well. Great shot, great goal. You see that? First of all, how long ago was the last time you saw that? And second of all, what are the memories of it?
I haven't seen that one against. I do see the one, my first goal every once in a while, and the first three. But that one is, I don't see that one too often. So it's pretty cool because, it was Atlanta, which is, not a hockey mecca like the other places. But scoring has always been my drug, and it's nice to be able to have those things, not only to show my kids, but just to have it in the memory banks to remember a life that I lived, even though it's behind me. It's always nice to see those things, and you know, now I'm trying to pass it on to other kids, right? Like I, this morning I worked with some kids on some shooting stuff, and it took me forever to hone that skill just by myself on a rink. So if I can help some kids with the technical side of shooting and things like that, I always try, you know. I'm in the automotive business by day, but when I can, I love helping out.
Hockey instruction and training and camps by night. Exactly. Yeah. You're doing a little bit what our guy Danny DeKaiser, who was with us last week, is doing now post retirement. He's really involved with the kids and teaching and instructions and having hockey camps right in, of course, where he's from, Detroit. He's a Michigander. So, yeah. And it's amazing how many people, once they're retired, they want to stay connected to the game and doing it through teaching, hopefully, the next generation of kids, you know, how to play the game is a part of it. It sounds like that's something that's of interest to you as well.
Yeah, it's always nice to give back, right? Like it's takes a lot of time to make mistakes. And if you can pass on some things, right? Everybody has their own path and needs to grow their, you know, and do it their way. But, you know, if you can help teach some kids some things along the way that's going to make their life easier or help their game out, then, you know, definitely giving back to a game that gave myself, my kids, and my family, my wife, they gave us so many memories and so many great things, you know. You talk about Germany, just going, like taking my kids on the ice after a game, right? Like, and the fans are all standing and jumping and they got flags.
That's so common over there. I always see pictures and videos from the German league, the Swedish league, the Swiss league, doesn't matter which league over there, the UK league, you know, where after a big win or a championship, you know, all the wives and the kids and they're all coming out there on the ice. Even after just a regular season win, you sometimes see them out there. It's pretty cool.
Yeah. Yeah, it's an incredible experience, and they get it. I feel like it came from football, aka soccer, in North America, right? It's just that type of fan base, and it's very uplifting because you always have that. We were sitting at the Leaf game last night, and I said, Wayne Primo was there, and I said, you know, they need more European style. Maybe we need a standing area only. The tickets are a little cheaper, and you get the real diehards that come there, and they stand and they chant and they bring flags and. It's an amazing atmosphere that helps lift the team.
Yeah, there's no question. And it's great that they integrate the families into it, after a game. And we got one more clip for, Jeremy, before we get into the NHL part of the show, the discussion, of course, this is actually a scrap that he was in. Now he didn't fight often. He did not fight very often, but he just happened in I believe this was an AHL fight too, to get involved with someone that is blossoming right before our very eyes. And now he's retired. His opponent in this fight is now retired from the NHL, but he's now got this blossoming, burgeoning television career with ESPN in the United States right now. And that would be Pernell Carl Subban, PK Subban, and Jeremy Williams. Got into a little bit of a dust up with PK Subban back in New Year's Eve 2009 is when this took place. So we'll go back to December 31st, 2009. This is Jeremy Williams fighting, yes, PK Subban. Here it is.
Yeah, Williams ahead of him, gives him the pass. Williams across that line, but knocked down by Subban. A number of players converge in that corner. Subban and Williams come up grappling, and Williams has dropped the glove, and he wants a piece of Subban. Now Subban takes a swing at him.
Yeah, but Benoit grabbed him, too. You can't do that.
Yeah, I agree.
Tell him, announcer. You tell him. Yeah.
Subban, and Subban wanted no part of it. Meanwhile,
now, that was just a mess from the officials right from the get-go.
Subban decided to take the glove and throw a punch.
That was just a mess from the get-go, though, with the officials just totally fucking up what could have been something pretty big there. Pretty good.
It was, you know, I always say it's a nice scrap to have. It would have been, you know what? I will say this. He was young there. He was so strong.
Yes.
When I grabbed, I'm not, you know.
A lot of people said that about him. Yep.
I'm not the biggest guy. I wasn't known for my physical presence. But when I grabbed onto him, I was very surprised because he was pretty young then. He was so strong, and obviously you saw him, you know, it translated to a great career. So I probably shot him up there. You know, that fight probably really showed everybody, what he could really do. And yeah.
That was pretty. That fight should have been better than it was. But the officials, as often, just like when they denied us Binnington and Marc-Andre Fleury,
right?
You know, they couldn't help themselves but get involved there and try to break that up. But there we go. There is a little look back for Jeremy Williams, and it's always funny. I always see the big smile every time we roll the highlight film from the player on the show for the first time. They don't expect it, but it gets a big smile out of them. Pretty cool seeing some of those old clips, some of your old work, isn't it?
It certainly is. It's nice, you know, the hockey life is so quick. You don't really take time to sit back and reminisce as much when you're in it. So it's nice when you're retired to go over those things.
I know they're both retired now, Evan McLaren. That's a great comment. Run it back. Subban Williams too, says Evan in our chat, one of our great viewers. And yeah, there you go. You'd sign up for that. I think if it comes with a certain financial incentive, you might sign up for that.
Yeah, substantial. You're right.
Yeah. Yes. It'd have to be something. We're not just talking about, you know, 20 or 30 bucks. Yeah. It's going to have to be something a little bit more than that to get Jeremy interested in a little rematch there with PK Subban. But great stuff. Jeremy, we'll get into yesterday's playoff hockey. We had four games, obviously, on Saturday. I'll group the first two games together. The Florida Panthers, Tampa Bay Lightning, Carolina Hurricanes, New York Islanders. Shout out to the Islanders and shout out to the Lightning. Both of them looking to avoid a sweep, and they both did. The Islanders, I thought they played maybe their best game of the series, certainly one of them, because they were all over Carolina early, and then they took that penalty, and Seth Jarvis scored on the power play, but still, they played pretty good up until that point, and Patrick Waugh said it. We can't be discouraged. We've played well, but the Islanders, you know, they kept stuck to it. Even when they were down 1-0, they eventually tied the game, took the lead. Carolina ends up tying it late in the third. Third period, they needed some saves from Varlamov because I thought Carolina had more of the better chances in overtime, but the Islanders persevered, found a way, and they ended up winning it. And as it often can be in these playoff overtime games, Jeremy, an unlikely source for the overtime winner, Robert Bortuzzo, shot from the blue line, beats Frederik Andersen and gives the Islanders a win in game four to avoid the sweep and send that series back to Raleigh for game five. And then the other game, which shocked everybody, that Mikhail Sergachev, this guy broke his leg, okay? And this was a broken leg not suffered, you know, 6 months ago or 1 year ago. This was just a few months ago in what, late January, early February. And here this guy is back on the ice April 27th in a Stanley Cup playoff game. I couldn't believe it. Everybody was stunned. We had no idea he was even skating, quite honestly, let alone back on the ice for the pregame skate yesterday and in the lineup for game four, a must-win game four for the Lightning. And the moment I saw he was playing, I should have bet it because I didn't, but I was starting to think, well, Tampa Bay is going to win this probably. This is going to be such an emotional lift for them. Getting this guy back, who's their next best defenseman after Victor Hedman by far on this hockey team. And you just saw it right away. There was a little pep in their step. There was live legs. They were winning the puck battles. They got that power play finally going early in the game, which they could not do the other game. Steven Stamkos got them on the board right away. 1-0 lead. Sergachev ends up getting a point in his first game back as well on one of the goals. Florida made it interesting because, look, they're fucking relentless. They'd never, ever go away. They got that thing to 4-3, and it looked like nervous times again for Tampa, but ended up being another Stamkos goal to really put it away, 5-3. Nick Paul cashes again. We're talking about the Nick Paul goal prop, plus 350, plus 380, great prices. And he scores again. He gets the 6-3 goal for Tampa Bay. It was just, once he was in the lineup, it's like, how does Tampa lose this game with just the emotional lift of seeing this guy on the bench and this guy on the ice again, who's a beloved teammate, great defenseman. And sure enough, it gets a terrific performance out of the Tampa Bay line. Fairy tale shit, really. Fairy tale stuff, like I said on Twitter. The guy comes back. We think broken leg. We'll see you in training camp. And here he is. He's back yesterday in game four for the Tampa Bay Lightning. So incredible win for Tampa Bay. Incredible that Sergachev came back. And by the way, that Steven Stamkos performance, two goals, Jeremy, yesterday. That's now a goal in every playoff game. You know what he's telling Tampa management right now and Julien Brisebois? This is what you're missing out next season, possibly. Because obviously he's a free agent after this season. The talks have not gone well between Steven Stamkos' camp and the Lightning to the point where it's looking very possible he's not back with the team. This is just a little, hey, you better realize what you might be missing next season if I'm not around with the kind of performance Stamkos has delivered here for the Lightning in the Stanley Cup playoffs.
Yeah. I mean, you look at all those teams. Now, Carolina, you got to play a very strict and hard playoff game, right? It's they're built like Rod Brindamore. So it's for them, it was a do or die. Backs against the wall, you know that they're going to come out. They're not going to lay down, right? Because nobody wants to be swept. Nobody, you know, there's always hope. This is the best thing about sports, is that when you're at that high of a level, there's always hope. There's always the, we're going to be that team. We're going to be that team. So, you know, for them to come out, you know, you got to have a hard start and close it off. And, you know, you look at Tampa on the other side of it. They've won championships. They know how to play. They have a good staff. It's just playing against Florida, like you said, like nobody expects Florida to be as good as they are, you know, like, yes, they have success, but nobody really sees how relentless they are in terms of their offensive pressure. You know, their transition game has been fantastic. And, you know, Tampa's, they've done a great job, but there's some lack there in terms of that, what they used to be, right? It's just like
their 5-on-5 game, Jeremy's not great. It's not what it used to be. They're so power play reliant this year, you know, for much of the season. If the power play is not clicking, the team is not clicking. And Florida probably is the better 5-on-5 team. Although until yesterday, they finally got the better of Florida at 5-on-5. And actually, they got Bobrovsky on a day where he's not quite human. And another issue Tampa's had, Jeremy, you might agree with this, is that the third and the fourth line the last few years, they've had some great third and fourth lines with offensive punch, ability to get in on the forecheck, have these shifts where they just hem in the opposing team in the defensive zone. I think back to a Blake Coleman and a Yanni Gourde and Barclay Goodrow, who are players that they were all on a line together, third line for Tampa Bay, and that was a tremendous line, and it gave them some offense too. They don't have that anymore. They don't have a shit ton of punch anymore from the third and the fourth line outside of maybe Nick Paul. So they don't have that forward depth. I think outside of Sergachev and Hedman, there's a lot of inexperience and a lot of, you know, mediocre play on the back end, and it puts a lot more stress on Vasilevsky. Yep.
Losing McDonough's got to hurt, right? Like, he was such a – I played with him 1 year in Hartford. That's a big presence. You can't always fill that void, and that was, I think, a big reason in one of the years there. So,
and a shot blocker machine as well. And speaking of shot blocks, there's a few. Actually, I've done some homework on the shot blocking props, Rocco, so we'll mention those when we get to the Sunday games. There are a few that I like as far as shot blocks go. McDonough is one of them for the Nashville Predators as they take on Vancouver later today. Now we talk about the Toronto Maple Leafs. Look, I've actually lost my mind sometimes with just ripping this team and yelling and screaming at the top of my lungs. I'm not going to do that today. They're not even worth it anymore, getting that worked up. Shame on me. I did take them last night. And I'll tell you this right now. After what I saw last night from the Toronto Maple Leafs, I'm just going to say it right now. As far as in a big playoff game, backs against the wall, needing to have this win, the Toronto Maple Leafs, I am not going to commit $1 of my sports betting bankroll for a bet on this damn team in a huge spot again. Not one single dollar. It's not going to happen after last night again. It's not going to happen. And what I saw in the first two periods was, I can't even say shocking, because there's just been so many disappointments and so much bed shitting and so much pants shitting from this franchise over the last 8 years that I can't even say it's shocking anymore. What that was a lack of any sort of jump. You know, they could barely generate anything. They could barely get in the offensive zone. They were chipping the puck in all night, and they could never get in and retrieve it. Boston always just got the puck and threw it back out again last night in that game. There was very little that worked. The special teams is a complete and utter disgrace right now for the Toronto Maple Leafs in these playoffs. Do you know what the stats are for the Leafs and the special teams department in this series? They are now 1-for-13 on the power play. 1-for-13. You know, put Jeremy Williams back on the ice with a team, they'll be better than 1-for-13 on the power play. I guarantee you that.
I put up a post that we were at the game, my brother-in-law and I had a few messages like, oh, they need you on the power play. And, you know, it was – it wasn't there wasn't enough speed. You know, I love the throwback. It's a newer style to the power play break in. But they never ever had second layer speed. Excuse me. They never really had that second layer speed. So their entries were always passes that were good passes. They had to pass through the guy, but then everybody was stationary. And then, so when they did chip it in, there wasn't that guy driving through.
There's no puck support. There's no, what they call it. No puck support. Yeah.
There was no speed to be able to match Boston's incredible defense, right? They're defenders. They smother. They got big defensemen with long reach. They weren't able to penetrate because they didn't have any speed. For a team that's fast and skilled, they certainly didn't use that to their advantage. And it was sad to watch. You know, you're sitting there with some. I was sitting behind Felix Potvin, which was like I was starstruck. Right?
Was he there? No shit, Felix. Yeah, so I thought he keeps a pretty low profile. I'm surprised he's in the alumni box at a Leaf game.
Yes, yeah, so he says I come maybe once a year, and I was just like, I waited and waited, and I went. I had to talk to him because, like, if I was pretending to be a goalie when I was young, it was Felix Potvin, right? So. Also, a lot bigger than
he's
I thought.
He's the best goalie to wear a Leaf jersey in that building last night, yeah. Quite honestly.
Yeah. And so, you know, you're sitting there and you're – it wasn't a great – A, the atmosphere isn't there and everybody's like, oh, the fans should be louder. But, you know, there was never any – there was two times when they were loud. It was when Marner scored that incredible goal and when Reeves hit a guy. And other than that, or when Willie first started touching the puck and – two things have to happen. One, yes, Toronto has a quieter atmosphere, but two, you got to give them something to cheer about, and they want a certain style of game, and they're kind of sick of the 4-on-4 type possession style summer hockey that was played last night. You know, like, listen, I played some pro hockey. I'm not an NHL guy, but when you're watching, you can see some glaring things, and it just didn't seem like it was, you know, a do or die game for them, which in reality it was, right?
That's shocking to me. What an indictment of this team. I said that exact phrase, I think last year or 2 years ago when they lost and they got bounced. I said, what an indictment on this team to not be ready for a game that you have to win. I mean, I remember there was a rant. It was like, I'm screaming, you're not ready. And I'm just losing it. How can you say you weren't ready? And Mitch Marner said it after one of the games last year or 2 years ago. It was against Montreal. It was against Montreal when they had that 3-1 series lead and they spit the bit and they lost in seven. And he said after the game, they weren't ready, one of them, to try to close out that series. That's what it looked like last night again, that still, even after all these years, you know, we weren't ready. And it's no wonder I have to hear nonsense all year from Tavares and some of these other players all year saying it's another lesson we have to learn. And like Zach Phillips says, who does the great Leaf postgame show, stop with the lessons, man. This is 8 years of this core together that's got one playoff series win behind their name. One. Stop with the lessons. You haven't learned shit. You'll never learn shit at this point. That's the way I see it. You'll never learn at this point in time.
A great example, and now this guy knows how to win, and it's amazing that he's so effective, in all honesty, for how big he is, Maroon.
Yeah.
You watch him out there. He had the puck down in the zone. He turned pucks over for him. He's their fourth line guy, and he was making a difference when he was out on the ice, right? It's, you know, that is to me why teams win, is they have those guys that they do show up in the playoffs. You know, I'm not going to sit here and pretend like I won championships or was a playoff player, but you can recognize it when you see it, right? And there's a reason guys are like that. And he was a big part of their, you know, Marchand's always doing his thing. But it's not, you know, Pastrnak had a goal, but it's not like he was controlling the game at all. He's that guy that can be hit or miss, and then, or he's on in the playoffs, sorry, but he finds a way to score a goal. But who creates a lot of that? Marchand, right? And they have those depth guys that are willing to be greasy, and they're, you know, I'm not a general manager. It's not that easy, but I feel like Toronto needs more guys like that. They're going to be a little bit more physical, that can play both sides and not just be fast and you know, speedy. They got a lot of the same type of player, which is never great.
And they try to get tougher, meaner. And I think they've done a good job in that regard. But at the end of the day, first of all, you know, it seemed like they weren't pushing back physically enough. Now they've got that, and now they can't score. That's the hilarious part. We've ripped their goaltending. We've ripped their defense in years past when they've shriveled in the playoffs. We've ripped their lack of toughness, lack of pushback, lack of getting in someone's face. Now it's their offense. They've stopped scoring. They've scored, what, two goals or less in, what, eight of the nine playoff games going into last, and last night again, just two goals. They've stopped. The power play is a disaster, 1-for-13. Their penalty kill in this series has given up 7 power play goals to the Bruins on 13 attempts. That's over 50% power play conversion rate for the Bruins in this series. You talk about shit at both ends in the special teams battle in this series. Your power play is pathetic, and your penalty kill is just as pathetic right now if you're the Toronto Maple Leafs. It's brutal. Absolutely. It's terrible. The third goal that sunk the ship last night in the second period looked like a bunch of buffoons out there. I'm just going to call it like I see it. That's what it looked like to me. People playing around each other in the neutral zone. Three guys caught in the neutral zone. TJ Brody fumbles the puck. That's basically his fucking season in a nutshell right there. Fumbles the puck in his own zone. And 2-on-0, easy goal to finish off for the Bruins. 3-0. And look, people are going to get all excited that they battled back in the third period. Well, you know what? Too little, too late. As far as I'm concerned, the first two periods were a team that was pathetic, was bad in all three zones, that didn't have that urgency right from the opening puck drop, which they needed in a game like that to avoid a 3-1 series deficit. It was just more of the same from this Leafs team. And then you have to see the team actually splintering apart on the bench right before our very eyes with the little squabbling going on. Matthews and Marner and Nylander, and Nylander saying, you know, this isn't junior hockey, you know, flapping his gums at Mitch. Mitch throwing his gloves down like a little baby. I mean, that's what Mitch Marner's become, just a little infantile, you know, a little baby right now. You know, he's bitching to the refs all game. Mitch, you got 5 power plays to Boston's 3 in game 3, by the way. So yeah. Stop about the refs. Okay, play, you know,
and there's going to
puck away in the defense. You know what he does too? He gives the puck away in the neutral zone, Mitch. And it's with these stupid little rinky dink peewee plays, you know, this little toe drag or this little dangle move in the neutral zone. He turns the puck away, turns the puck over, and he's still doing that crap. And he did it again last night. It's just awful stuff. He's a little baby. He's a little infantile. That's what he is. Little infantile, little Mitchy, you know, get his little soother out there last night. Get his little soother. You know, get his little put him in his little crib last night. What a awful! The whole thing just looked bad.
It is sad, and you know, you can look at it in a lot of ways. It's like playoff hockey is different, no matter what you think. But you got to make hard plays, and you know, you still have to have your skill players be skilled, but it has to be within a set of rules that work. And I would say one of the other major factors was there wasn't a lot of there was no urgency in their playmaking. Like there was times where they're down 2 goals with 1.5 minutes left and they're standing, you know, and now I don't know if that's player related or coaching related, but he's standing and guys aren't swinging low to get speed. They're just standing, but nobody has speed. So they can't shoot it to tip it in. It just looked like everybody wasn't on the same page. And then, you know, like even on a loose puck that bounced, 2 guys were like, are you going to get it? Are you going to get it? There was no like, I'm going, you read
don't
off.
Don't take charge mentality, essentially,
yeah.
Right.
Yeah, because if one guy just goes all the time, you're going to read off it, right? So it's hard to read somebody that's in between. And last night, that's what it seemed like. Everybody was unsure of their task, right?
Yeah. Yeah, it was. And you could just see they were losing the puck battles to Boston in the first two periods, the special teams. Again, Boston was much better, you know, and like I say, the third period, I saw finally a little life, a little energy from the team. But why does that have to be 3-0 down in the third period of a game you have to win before we see something like that kind of an effort? Just absolutely abysmal. And I made the funny ha-ha remark on Twitter, by the way, about Austin Matthews when they Sheldon Keefe saying after the game he had to leave the game due to illness. And I truly believe he is very ill, very sick. I heard it was maybe even food poisoning, believe it or not, early in the week that led to this, and he couldn't continue the game. And I said, yeah, it's definitely 100% true. Austin Matthews is battling with a sickness, sick of this team, sick of this franchise, sick of his teammates, and how short and how lame they come up, you know, it seems every game. That's what he's sick of. I think that's what's causing him the illness. It's got nothing to do with food. It's got to deal with this team that comes up short year after year after year. I'm not even hanging this on Matthews. You know, Matthews, I know, has had some tough playoffs, and he hasn't produced and he hasn't performed. But the one shining moment in this series was his brilliant game two, you know, and that's and that is apparently that night when he started feeling bad and coming under the weather and being sick. And he clearly was less than 100% in game three. He clearly was less than 100% last night because he couldn't finish the game. So I definitely don't blame him as much as some of the other stars, you know, on this Leafs team. And Morgan Rielly had a tough night last night. Brody comes back in the lineup. It's more of the same. So it's just Samsonov, too. Like, he's getting out goaltended by Jeremy Swayman. That's an issue. Before I wrap this up, though, this game, because we got to move on, I do have to give Boston all the credit in the world.
Yeah.
This is a phenomenal effort from them the last two games. You talk about a captain that shows up and gets it done. How about Brad Marchand? How about Brad Marchand these last two games? How good has he been?
Absolutely tremendous. Everybody knows, right? Everybody's like, hates him, but he's been voted the number one guy you would like on your team, right? And he does get away with stuff, right? Like, they replayed the slash on Marner's stick like four times on the Jumbotron in the game. But yeah, but in the end, refs miss a lot of stuff, right? So there was also some things done on the other side of it. Like, if you play the whole tape, there's going to be some things. There's always leeway, right? Refs are human. Players make mistakes. The refs make mistakes. You try and get them as consistent as possible, but they're always going to try and even it up, especially when they're under the microscope like they are in Toronto, right? He does a fantastic job. Correct me if I'm wrong, but he trains with Crosby and McKinnon, correct?
I believe so. Yeah, I'm pretty sure of that. Yeah.
Right? If you look at compete and battle, winning battles, it's just something, it's a skill, right? And this is something that we're teaching young kids now. I mentioned my brother-in-law and I were talking about it at the game. Not something that I was necessarily great at, right? My thing was scoring goals. Right. If you can win battles, your ceiling is much higher than if you are a guy that loses 30 or only wins 30%, right? Marchand's a guy that's going to win probably 70% of the battles he goes into out of sheer desire and will and work ethic. Right. And that's something that he wears on his sleeve. And then he starts scoring some goals and is able to produce. Right. That goal on the power play was, you know, it all comes from the screen in front, but their puck move is fantastic. And to go back on the Matthews thing as well, is sometimes you need some other guys to get you through the first few games and then your stars can go. Right. Like, if you look at a team that wins the championship, it's not the stars that are just going to, you know, maybe they're going to continue to produce the entire time, but your fourth line is going to score you some big goals. Your goaltending is going to come up big. Your defense is going to win you some games. And I think it really is a team thing when you're going to try and even win a series, let alone a championship. So it's not always on Matthews. I think he's done a fantastic job. His role is to play a decent defensive style while scoring goals, right? And so I think he's done more than enough for that team. And obviously everybody would love him to have games like game two every night. But you can't. You got to have your whole team pull and help out.
Yeah, no question. You do. You need everyone on board. That was, unfortunately, look, Ryan Reeves, everyone will look at his giveaway too to get that shitstorm snowball started in the wrong direction for Toronto, but it was kind of a tough break too, because it hit the Bruin player stick and it just bounced right there for James Van Riemsdyk. I mean, it just was right there for him, and one-on-one with the goaltender, kind of a bad break for him. It's the kind of breaks you have when you just have zero luck in the postseason, you know, like the Toronto Maple Leafs have, but all kinds of issues. We could go on and on forever talking about them, but bottom line is they're up against it now. I'd love to say that, hey, I have faith in them moving forward, but I don't. You know, 3-1 down. Maybe, you know what they'll do? This would be so Leafs to do this. They might win game five. They might even win game six and finally win back home in Toronto for the first time, break this fucking pathetic 8-game home playoff losing streak that they're on right now, which is unbelievable. That's an indictment of this group too, this core. 8 straight home playoff losses. And I know it's a wine and cheese crowd in that building, and they don't exactly help you out as far as getting energy in your system, but that's pathetic to have that kind of a losing streak in the playoffs at home. But watch them win game five, give them a little hope. Watch them win game six, really give everyone hope. And then they go back to Boston for game seven. They'll rip your heart out all over again and lose like 5-1 or something.
Hey, we did play through COVID.
Yeah.
So everybody's used to playing with no fans, right? So nothing changes there.
Yeah. If you're a Leaf fan, you know, if you're going to lose, get it over with in game five. You know, don't prolong the agony, you know, to a game six or a game seven. Just get it done. Just end this shit right now. And by the way, if this season ends with this series and another first round loss, I'm going to say this right now. There's going to be a fucking nuclear bomb at MLSE going off courtesy of Keith Pelley, the new CEO. He's going to blow this shit to smithereens. Shanahan, you better watch your back. Keith, you'd better watch your back. Core four, everyone in the big time, big players on this team, you're going to have to watch your back. Because there's no guarantee any of you guys are back here next year. That's where we're at. It's about time to hit that nuclear bomb button and just blow this shit up.
I think they had their out with Nylander with that whole thing. Now, I think he's a good piece that they could keep. But one of those guys, unfortunately, has to go. You know, it's likely going to, you know, you hate to say it, it's likely probably going to be Marner or Tavares would be difficult, but like Nylander was their out back then, and they could have got some really good pieces for him, and they kept him. But it's just too many of the same thing, right? Tavares is the outlier there, I think, where he's a leader, he works, he's got that work ethic and things like that. But and Matthews obviously with the scoring ability, but one of those guys has to go. I think you can probably keep Riley, but one of those forwards has to go and get some good pieces that are gonna. They're going to help you move forward.
Yeah. It's time to blow it up. As far as I'm concerned, if they don't like, they got to make as in serious changes. And we'll see if that happens. If they do not make a miraculous 3-1 series comeback here against Boston,
the last game, who would you like to see go?
After what I saw, I think Marner's got to be the one sent packing. Honestly. Yeah. I mean, he looks like a little baby out there. He really does. Wah, wah, wah. That's what it looked like to me all night with him last night. I mean, my goodness. And he's been awful again in the playoffs. The goal was great, but it's kind of a hollow goal, man. 3-0 down. It's like when you score a basket when you're up 20 in an NBA game at the end of it, or you're down 20 and you score this big highlight reel dunk. Who the fuck cares? You're going to lose the game anyway. It's about time of a goal like that. Absolutely. So, it's just like I said. It's not about scoring. You got enough scoring. It's about the giveaways in the neutral zone. Trying to dangle his way through three people in the neutral zone in a playoff game. That's unacceptable. And turn the puck over. And then try to not go into the tough areas of the ice and then whine for a penalty instead of hustling back and being involved in the play that's going the other way against you. So there's all kinds of things to go to talk about with Marner and the detriment. He's a gifted offensive player. No one's ever going to doubt that and deny that. But there's other elements of his game that need to improve at playoff time, and they never have, and they still haven't. You know, and that's kind of where we're at with him. The last game of the night, you look at it, Dallas and Vegas. This game drove me nuts for most of the game because this could have been 5-0, 6-0 Dallas. I'm like, how are they not blowing this Vegas team out? Like, they're all over Vegas. They're the much better team tonight. They were swarming all over them. And Logan Thompson, it's one of the great goaltending performances I've seen in a long time in a losing effort. That's right, a losing effort. What I saw last night from Logan Thompson is the only reason that game was close. The only reason. The only reason that game was tied was low. Vegas was pathetic last night. They were dominated start to finish. It was all Dallas in that game. Other than they capitalized on a Jack Eichel short-handed goal, and they got a seeing eye shot from Braden McNabb. And other than that, Dallas basically carried the play. I do think in the third, Vegas, that was their best period. They finally, I think, played Dallas close to even in the third. But for the first two periods, that was all Dallas Stars for the first 40 minutes. They came out with the effort I was hoping for. I cashed with the first period Dallas to score a goal. I really felt good about that. And sure enough, they did. And what I like about Dallas is that, look, it looked like this game could have gotten away from them at 2-2 when they were up 2-0. They're dominating. They just can't make it 3-0. Logan Thompson's making breakaway saves, odd man rush saves, saves on rebounds, all this kind of stuff. And he's just doing everything. He looks like Logan Brodeur, quite honestly, last night in that game for the Vegas Golden Knights. And they could have really been rattled that they go out of that second period, come out of it 2-2. It's like, how the hell are we not up 8-2 right now with the chances we've had? We had five breakaways after the first two periods. Dallas with zero goals on those five breakaway chances, not to mention all of the other odd man rushes they had. I don't know what Vegas was doing defensively last night. I couldn't recognize them, Jeremy, from the team they were on the run to the Stanley Cup last year and in the first two games of this series. You know, that's how bad it was for them in the first two periods and how good Dallas was. But Dallas got better, and in the overtime, you know, they still added more of the offensive zone time. And who else but Wyatt Johnston? This kid's amazing. He is, I think, ascending himself to, I think, already maybe the best player on this team. What a night. Great job by Pete DeBoer to put him on the top line, knowing we need a spark offensively. Boy, did he give them that spark. Two goals, including the overtime winner. And he is the one guy on the Dallas Stars that had the sense, Jeremy Williams, the common sense to shoot the puck high, elevate the puck, get it over, up, and in the air, because Logan Thompson was stopping everything down low, everything. You know, you were not going to beat him down low. The pads, he was stopping everything post to post along the ice. You had to elevate the shot. Nobody was doing that enough for Dallas. That's the one indictment of all the chances they had. Everything was low. Finally, Wyatt Johnston with an elevated shot beats Logan Thompson with a beautiful shot for the overtime winner, and we've got a series again. Dallas wins a game they had to.
Yeah, and unfortunately, I didn't get to see any of the Dallas game, but Wyatt Johnston, Windsor Spitfire, correct? He had a fantastic junior career. He's one of the best. No, smaller guy, but just so crafty, right? And when I talk about scoring, my thing was, I don't count it if it's not top shelf. Now, not always the greatest advice for kids out there, because the low blocker shot is possibly one of the biggest cheat codes in hockey. But everybody shoots differently, and everybody's going to be able to create offense, right? When you elevate the puck, multiple things can happen, especially if there's some traffic or movement, right? Everything's situational. You got to see where a goalie's playing. Sometimes a goalie's just got a hot glove. You got to change things up, right? I was never a five-hole shooter. Some guys just know when a goalie is hot up top that they're going to leave some things open, right? And so you have to be on the fly. You know, we talk about coaching strategy on the fly. You have to do that as a player with your individual, you know, with shooting, with passing, right? Some D are good at knocking pucks down, so you're not going to be able to sauce, right? You're going to have to create a few changes in your game to be able to, you know, it's a chess match, right? So if somebody's doing one thing, right, it's like goalies. I get to shoot on Cam Talbot every year. It was one of the greatest things for my shooting development as a pro, because he works so hard. So we would constantly be like, okay, well, if he does this, I do this. And then the player, it goes back and forth, right, where the goalies are always trying to figure out shooters, and then there has to be a new strategy, right? Like, there used to be goalies had their hand way out over top, and then players were shooting lower and more goals are going in. So it's all situational, and young players have to know that as well. And Wyatt is obviously one of those up-and-coming, incredibly gifted players in Dallas.
It's not just his offense, and I've talked about this a lot too. He's very good away from the puck. His effort level away from the puck, his compete level away from the puck. He's a takeaway machine. He's becoming like a mini, for the other team that they're playing in this series, Mark Stone. He's becoming another Mark Stone. Just take the puck away. Just lift the stick, get the puck. And his effort away from the puck, absolutely tremendous. And he's going to be a good one. He already is a good one. I'm just so impressed with Wyatt Johnston. What a game for him, leading the Dallas Stars to a victory in a game they had to have last night. And like I said, for Logan Thompson and the Vegas Gold, for Logan Thompson, that's about as good a game as I've seen a goalie play in a loss. He was just incredible. It's the only reason that game even got to overtime. So credit to him. Credit to Logan Thompson, even though they did not win that game last night, because he was exceptional. Hopefully our picks are exceptional. Our bets are exceptional here for the Sunday card, which we will begin breaking down right now. We will start with the game that's coming up at 2:30 p.m. Eastern, Winnipeg, Colorado. The Avs minus 160, home favorites, 6.5 being the total. Colorado up 2-1 in this series. Seen three games in this series and three overs, so it's hard to go against that right now. I'm good. It's hard to say where Winnipeg's at right now. because that third period was a shambles for them. It was a debacle. They were in the penalty box the whole period. They lost their cool. They lost their discipline. And the Colorado power play did a tap dance all over them and made them pay for it. Five unanswered goals to turn a 2-1 Winnipeg lead into a 6-2 Colorado win in game three. Winnipeg trying to bounce back here from that here in this one. I'm going to take a small shot in the Jets again, but I've lost a little confidence. I've lost a little faith after what I saw, and especially from Hellebuck. Hellebuck's got to step up here. Mm-hmm. You know, he's now given up in this series. Six goals, the game they won, he still gave up six. Five goals, and then five goals again last night, or six goals in game three. He's got to step it up. He has not been a great playoff goaltender for this team, not good enough, but I think tonight this is a must-have for the Jets. I think there's pride. There better be. There wasn't last year, and Rick Bowness called him out for it. No pushback. Well, this is a spot where you better fucking have some pushback. The Leafs didn't have it last night. Let's see if this Winnipeg Jets team has it here in a game four. So I'm going to do a little Jets team total over 2.5. But what I really like is I like the first period Jets to score. You know, we've really been good with this bet lately with these desperate teams. Look at Dallas last night. We cast first period Dallas Stars to score a goal. Here in this game, you can get Winnipeg Jets to score a goal first period, minus 150, minus 155 at BetMGM. So, again, you're laying a bigger price with this, but I feel really good about Winnipeg finding the back of the net in the opening period. They need this game. They can't go back to Winnipeg down 3-1. So that's the bet I like the most as far as the Winnipeg side. I will have a little money line and a little full game over 2.5 team total, but I'm going to grab a little Jets to score in the first period, minus 150. Minus 155. And again, like I said, I'll be back on the over 6.5. And I'm going to run back that same parlay I mentioned Friday on the show with the Oilers and the Kings over 5.5. Put that together with Jets and Avs over 5.5. And you'll get a great plus price again with that. Look, every LA Edmonton game's gone over. Every game in this series has gone over. And I don't know if it's going to change because while teams want to tighten up defensively, Colorado's struggling to defend Winnipeg and vice versa. LA is struggling to defend Edmonton, and even Edmonton's capable of giving up a few goals here and there. So it's been a recipe for higher scoring hockey in both series. So we're going to run back that over 5.5 parlay as well with this game for Winnipeg, Colorado, along with Edmonton, LA. What do you think here, Jeremy? Can Winnipeg bounce back, or is Colorado just too good for them? What do you think?
I think Winnipeg, it's tough. I think Colorado at home is so strong. And I think the reason that Hellebuck's having such a tough time, even though he is such a big goalie, is like, look at the big bodies they got, right? Like they have so much firepower and they're big and they're strong and they move. And I would assume it's really difficult for Hellebuck to just especially with the lateral movement and the skating ability of the abs to be able to constantly tracking pucks. And, you know, when you got those big guys crossing your path, crossing your eyes, right, taking away your eyes all the time, whether it be for a split second, it's relentless too. It's not like it's something that just happens on the power play. It's in 5-on-5. They're dangerous all the time. So I do like the Avs tonight. I do like the over, but not. I would take a 5.5. I don't think they're going to be as aggressive. I think teams are I would assume by the end of the series, it's going to slow down a little bit. But I do like the Avs in this one. I do like the over 1.5. Like you said, Winnipeg scoring. But I think it's going to be an over 2.5 first period.
There you go. So that's the first period. First period over 2.5. Wow.
2.5 and then slide it down. Then they're going to slide it down. But yeah.
That's going to be a big plus price with that too, by the way, with that first period over 2.5. So that's pretty good. I like you're going for the big bang for your buck there. That's what we like on this Ice Guys show. Yeah. Yes.
You got to reach, right?
Yep. Wyatt, well, look what I did last night with the bargain bin special, which I failed to mention in my recap of the Dallas game. Wyatt Johnston over 1.5 points was my bargain bin special of the night on the show yesterday, plus 400. So it was great to see him get the two goals and the 2 points there, obviously, to get that done. As far as props in this game, Gabe Vilardi, I'm waiting for him to step up here. He's had a quiet series, I got to admit, especially goal scoring wise, but I'm not abandoning ship on Gabe Vilardi. This could be the day. Kyle Connor, too, they've got to rise to the occasion. By the way, the Jets, too, it's important to point out, Brendan Dillon day to day. At the end of that melee, Avs and Jets on Friday, he suffered a huge, huge cut, big time, and he is likely out for this game. He is. So there's going to be some shuffling on the blue line here for the Winnipeg Jets going into this game this afternoon. It's looking like Nate Schmidt is, and Logan Stanley actually is the guy I think that's coming in. Logan Stanley, Nate Schmidt, the third pair, Pionk Sandberg, DeMelo Morrissey is going to be the blue line combination here for the Winnipeg Jets this afternoon. Those are definitely, and then for Colorado, I mean, take your pick. I'm going back to Zach Parise, well, because that's where the value is. We've hit some big goal props, Jeremy, with Zach Parise north of plus 300 because he's playing in the top six role. He's producing right now. I think he's hungry to win a Stanley Cup. It's the one thing he's missing in his great career. And, of course, this is his final season. Win or lose for Colorado, he's retiring at the end of the season. So Parise, props are worth a look. Big Val Nichushkin as well. Definitely I would be in. And Lekkonen. Those are the three. You could bet McKinnon and Rantanen until the cows come home and Makar. But if you're looking for a little more value in your player props for goal prop, assist prop, point props, it's those three guys. It's Parise, it's Lekkonen, and it's Big Val Nichushkin right now. For the Colorado Avalanche. All right, Vancouver, Nashville. We've got the Predators minus 130 home favorites, 5.5 the total. Vancouver leading the series, 2-1. It has that feel of a back and forth type of series here with the Canucks and the Predators. I did grab a little Nashville here, minus 130. They have to win this. They can't go back to Van City down 3-1. Clearly, Vancouver busted their tail to win game three. That was a rally the troops game. You know, everyone was talking about, oh, this team's vulnerable without Casey DeSmith. And they said, yeah, we'll show you. We'll block 30 shots. We'll just be an absolute tower of power defensively. And Casey DeSmith stepped up for Friday night in game three. Can he do it again, though? Because the reason why Casey DeSmith's been a journeyman backup his whole career is one game he can give you the goods, and the next game he can scuffle and struggle a little bit. So I think it's going to be more of the latter this time. Nashville's got to ramp up the urgency here. And they talked about, we got to get more pucks and bodies to the net. The usual coach speak from Andrew Brunette following the loss on Friday night. I think this will be a tough environment here for Vancouver. To win two in Nashville would be very impressive. And I don't want to say it's impossible for Vancouver to do it. And I still think Vancouver has what it takes, even with no Demko in this series, to win this series. But I think this is a decent spot here to look in Nashville's direction here, minus 130 in this game. This is one where I'm not on the over. I'm kind of refraining from overs right now in this series because there's just not a lot of shots. Mm-hmm. You know, the shot volume, it's been very difficult for both of these teams to, to surpass 20 shots on goal because there's so much shot blocking. The neutral zone's been clogged up both ways. So for me, it's just going to be a little look to Nashville here, minus 130 plus some props, which I will mention in just a bit. Jeremy, what do you think here? Canucks Preds game four.
Yeah, like you said, the goal, there's a ton of shot attempts, not a ton on net, right? And that's due to their both styles of game. Yep. A lot of puck protection. When you're talking about the backup, right, DeSmith, a lot of times you'll see when your backup comes in, the team plays so much better defensively because they're like, you don't want to say they're worried, but they want to make sure that they lighten the load, right? Sometimes when you have that big star goalie, you're like, he's got it, right? You've done it at every level I've played. It's always been the same way. He's got it. You know what I mean? Instead of that extra effort to help him out, you know, that's what makes great goalies even better, is that they only have to worry about what their job is, right? And they don't have to worry about two or three rebounds, because the D are clearing them or they're blocking that difficult play. You know, as you see it in the Boston game, one timer, Marchand blocking it, right? Getting in the lane, help out your goalie. So I do think that that's a big part of it. I think the defensive side is going to continue in this series until the end. I do like Vancouver, Canadian boy. I got to go, you know, because now the Leafs are by the wayside at the moment for me. I would love to see a Canadian team bring it home. So I think that it's going to be a tight one. Like you said, that over is set just right where it's a difficult choice. I would take the Canucks in a tight low scoring one tonight.
That, yeah. So Jeremy likes Vancouver here to take both games here in Nashville. And yeah, to me, this is a kind of a back and forth series. That's another reason why I like Nashville. I think there's, you know, this and draw, I think, could be live chip. I don't mind the draw. This has the makings of a very close. We almost got the draw, of course, in game three. So I might sprinkle on the draw. It's Nashville and a smaller sprinkle on the draw for me here in this game when it comes to the Canucks and the Predators. The way I see it is I think Nashville wins tonight. I think Vancouver might win game five. And then game six, I could see Vancouver. Even with DeSmith and Net, I could see Vancouver closing it out in six. I still think Vancouver, when it's all said and done, they've gotten more from their depth forwards than Nashville has. Their blue line has played better, and they've got their defensive game in order down the stretch. And so far in this series, it's been good. And look, if they're going to play that good as a team defensively, it's going to make life a little easier on DeSmith. We know DeSmith's not as good as Demko, but they can still win games with him if the defense gives him, you know, clears the front of the net, makes life easier on him, is able to take out the man in front, not have him face those high danger chances every single night. So, yeah, definitely, I think when you look at it, there's still a pathway for Vancouver, I think, to beat Nashville without Demko. It's going to be the question when you face, you know, likely Edmonton in the next round. You know, will you be able to ride DeSmith in a series like that? You know, that's going to end up being the big question. For props in this game, I would stick Miller and Besser to, you know, stick with them. If they're going to get, if Vancouver's going to get it done, it's going to be them. Hoglander's close to scoring. I think he's going to get one at some point because he's been noticeable as well for the Canucks. On the Nashville side of things, look, so much of it comes from Forsberg and O'Reilly and Nyquist. It's they're not always getting consistent production from others, but Colton Sissons is the one that I think stands out. If I'm taking a shot with someone other than the big three for Nashville, it's him. It's a Vancouver guy. He's had a lot of success in the past against Vancouver individually, so definitely, I think Colton Sissons might be worth a look in your prop wagers here tonight, or this afternoon, rather, in this game. All right, the next two games are tonight. Game four, Rangers and Capitals. Rangers minus 190 road favorites, 5.5 the total in this game. This is interesting because yesterday we saw two situations of a team up 3-0, and neither one closed the deal. Neither one. We saw the Islanders stave off a sweep, and we saw the Lightning stave off a sweep. And now the Capitals will look to do the same here tonight in this game. So I don't really want the Rangers here in this spot because we've seen teams show that pride, especially on home ice. We don't want to get swept. But at the same point in time, Washington's power play is miserable. This is another series where the special teams has been dominant for the Rangers. The Rangers are scoring more on the Capitals' power plays in this series than the Capitals are. Yeah. Jeremy, that tells you all you need to know right there. Like, they've had multiple shorthanded goals. You know, Shesterkin's been great. He's outplayed Lindgren, who definitely looks like he's showing signs of fatigue here in this series. I want nothing to do with the side, flat out. You don't have to bet every game. I want nothing to do with the side here. The Rangers, they look like they're the one team that actually could finish off a sweep, but we saw yesterday the home team's down 3-0. They showed some fight. They showed some pushback. They showed a desire. We're not letting our season end, at least in a sweep on our home ice. So, you know, Washington is going to try to take the ice with that same kind of mindset here. This is mostly going to be a prop game for me. I'm going to sprinkle on the full game over because it's an elimination game. And the reason why we endorse a lot of times Alex and I, Jeremy, is the full game overs for the elimination games is because you get crazy shit happening in the third period. Things could explode. You pull the goalie early, especially if it's Washington that's down because your season's on the line. So you get a chance for a lot of a goal explosion in the third period. So for me, this would be a little bit of over 5.5. And I know Alex made the case for the third period over with the Canes and the Islanders yesterday. I might look for a pregame third period over here, specifically a third period over where we could see, again, more goals if the situation arises where Washington's trailing. They've got to open this thing up. And obviously do everything they can to throw every shot on goal that they can with their season on the line if they're trailing in the third. So the third period over here in this game might be a good situational look, either pregame or you can bet it live maybe after the second intermission. What do you think here in this one, Jeremy? Rangers Caps game four.
If you look at the Rangers, they're too strong, I think. I think if any game that there's a clear, you know, if you look at the other two series where their sweeps were up, nobody expected them to even be in that situation. So I think it was a lot easier to say, oh, you know, the sweep. When you look at the Rangers Capitals, I think it's an aging Washington team that's just not what they used to be. And, you know, I'm going to go as far as to say that if you're going to pick the Rangers tonight, which I am, I would do it at -1.5 because, like you said, if they're up one goal, that goalie's coming out early, and I just don't think they have – they're struggling power play. I don't think the 6-on-5 is going to be any better. So for that, I think that if anybody has a chance of closing it out, it's New York tonight.
Jeremy likes the Rangers to complete the sweep here tonight against the Washington Cap. I certainly wouldn't bet against that happening, but the reason I'm not on the Rangers is I don't love the price. You're paying an even bigger number now. And the fact we did see, you know, failure to close out a sweep twice yesterday for both Carolina and Florida, unable to complete the sweep. That doesn't mean for sure it's going to happen here too. Rangers could end it, but it makes me at least uncomfortable enough. What we saw yesterday to not take the Rangers in any form here in this one today. Other than props, I do like some props. I like Kreider. I think he's a good prop look here tonight in this game. Vinny Trocheck, how do you not bet this guy right now? He's been absolutely tremendous for the Rangers. I'm going to go back to the well with Lafreniere. Feels like he's due to score as well. For Washington, I'm going to go back to John Carlson, who got their only goal the other game. He's been shooting the puck a lot lately and scoring. He's, you know, he had a good little goal scoring surge down the stretch. So John Carlson and maybe Connor McMichael, who's been noticeable. He scored a couple games ago, had a bunch of chances in game three, even though none of them went in. And then, you know what? Rocco's mentioning block shots prop. I do want to circle back on the earlier games. I like Neil Pionk block shots for Winnipeg over. I like Ryan McDonough for Nashville block shots over. And I definitely like Jacob Trouba, New York Rangers block shots over, as Rocco says in the chat. If you're looking for a good shot block prop, because look, you got to start looking at this market because block shots are going through the roof here in the first round of this series. Pionk, Winnipeg, McDonough, Nashville, and Trouba here for the New York Rangers in this game. I definitely agree with that. No question. And there's also a couple in the next game as far as shot blocks that might be a worth a look. We'll get to those in just a moment, too. But first, we'll talk about sides, totals, and props with Edmonton and L.A. Final game of this Sunday NHL playoff slate. We've got the looks like the Oilers here are -140 road favorites, right around the same price we saw from them in Game 3 the other night. Total 6.5, 2-1 series lead for the Oilers. Now, the mistake Edmonton made, Jeremy, in Game 2 was they had that big Game 1 win where they made the Kings look absolutely silly defensively, and then they kind of let them off the hook in Game 2, and they had a bad start. LA jumped on them early, and yes, Edmonton battled back. Eventually, that game got to overtime, but LA wins in overtime with an Andre Kopitar goal. They don't want to give the Kings life, and you don't want to turn this into a best of three going back to Edmonton. So can they put the hammer down here? We'll have to wait and see. I don't want to lay -140. I'm going to do what I did the other night here in this game, and that's Oilers team total over. We talk about this all the time, Jeremy, on this show. When the Oilers win, it's usually scoring at least 4 goals. You don't usually get situations where the Oilers score less than 4 and lose the game. So that's why, for me, when I bet Oiler games, regular season and playoffs, and I like them to win the game, and they're laying a price that I'm not comfortable with, I'll often go the team totals route as opposed to the money line, where you can lay -135 on the money line, but you could also take +106 with the Oilers team total over 3.5. So I just rather do that from a value standpoint with Oilers over 3.5 +106. I do like the full game over again. Why? Because it's been 3-0 to the over in this series. And you go to last year's playoff series, Jeremy, 6 games with the Oilers and the Kings, 5 of them went over the total. So you're just on this huge over run in an Oilers-Kings playoff series last year and this year combined. And as I mentioned earlier, I've also got over 5.5 in this game as part of that 2-game parlay with Winnipeg, Colorado, over 5.5. So we're doing the Avs, Jets, Oilers, Kings, over 5.5 parlay once again today, just like we did Friday night. We cashed it pretty easily on Friday night. What do you think here in this one, Jeremy? Are the Oilers too much for the Kings, or do the Kings and your old friend, look, Mr. Hamilton, is from the area, at least Caledonia specifically, Cam Talbot, does he have a response in him? We'll have to wait and see. And there's Alex, who's under the weather. He would have loved to be on the show today, Jeremy, but he's under the weather. My colleague here mentioning that 13-3 to the over in the last 16 Oilers-Kings playoff games over the last, 2 years and now this year combined. So that's quite the run. But what do you think here of this one, Jeremy, Oilers Kings?
Yeah, well, I think that you know, Cam is somebody that I'll always root for. And in all honesty, after that first game, it was looking pretty rough. And I have the Kings as one of my favorites to go deep, just because I didn't think the Oilers could, they're running gun games great, but I don't think they had the defense. I really thought that LA had the answer. They got some fantastic pieces. They got great leadership. Not that the Oilers don't. But I root for Cam. I think he's an absolute gamer. The Oilers are just so relentless, right? Like, they have Hyman, they get that grit. It's hard to stop them when they're going. And LA's had a tough time. I'm not going to pick who's going to win this game. I am rooting for the Kings. But I do think that you're right. It's going to be an over. I think a team total is also a really nice way to wager. If I could bet on the amount of saves that Talbot's going to make, I would probably take the over if there was a prop bet for me right now. I don't see one. Maybe in one of your other apps there is. But I would always take an over on Talbot saves and making the high. If they had a prop for him, making a highlight reel save to boot.
You know what? Even though I like the full game team total over for Edmonton, along, of course, with 6.5 and then the 5.5 over parlay with the Colorado-Winnipeg game, I think I'm going to take LA to score in the first period again, like I did in game two when they were off the game one loss and they scored early in game two. And it was my best bet. It's my best bet on the show Tuesday. Or I don't know if it was Tuesday, but it was game two in Edmonton. And LA was off the game one loss where they got thrashed 7-4. And they scored in the first few minutes. Adrian Kempe scored in the first few minutes of game two. Easy winner there. So I'm going back to that well. Because, look, the Kings do have to come out hard, come out fast, come out strong. They're down 2-1 in this series. That totally got away from them, and they got frustrated in Game 3. They were starting to get into hacking and whacking after the whistle, getting ejected from the game. That just frustration spilled over for them at the end of Game 3 the other night. And that what did it end up 6-1 for the Oilers in that game. So you got to think there's got to be a response here for L.A. early. So even though I'm on the Oilers for the game and their team total, I like in the first period the Kings to score. So L.A. to score in the first period, you can get -155 or so at BetMGM with that. I'm going to be looking in that direction once again, just like in game two. And then for props, I'm going to go back to Henrique because he stays up there on the top line. Hyman is just a must at this point. What he's doing is simply amazing, just incredible at this point in time. It feels like Corey Perry's due to score. We'll see if it is tonight for the Edmonton Oilers. And then for the Kings, Adrian Kempe. Adrian Kempe's been one of the lightning bolts for them in this series. He's been shooting the puck a lot, too. So, I'm a little leery of shots on goal props these days because they keep fudging the stats, Jeremy. We keep seeing the shots on goal numbers change. Even last night, I was looking at one of the games. There was 5 shots on goal for one of the teams. And the next thing I know, I see the scoreboard in the corner of the screen watching the game, and it's at 3. They took 2 shots away. So they're adjusting these in game. So it's very, very tricky sometimes with these shots on goal props to really feel good about them because you think it's a shot on goal and they're not registering it as one.
Yeah,
it can be tricky.
Tough in real time. Maybe it hits somebody tight or it goes off the somebody's stick and it looks like a save, right? It can be very, it was nice. It was probably a lot better for those props when there wasn't as much replay.
There's probably some truth to that, no question. So going to be interesting to see how this one plays out. But like I said, definitely interested in a bunch of different ways to look at this one. Oilers for the game, their team total. Kings to score in the first period, and specifically full game over. And also that dumb it down a bit, get it down to 5.5 and pair it with that Winnipeg-Colorado game as well, over 5.5. Great stuff. Jeremy, this is awesome. We'll have to do this again for sure. Getting you back on the show. Awesome work for your NHL or your Ice Guys debut, I should say. You sound like a seasoned NHL analyst, honestly. Great insight.
Thank you very much. I really appreciate it. It's nice to stay in the game any way I can.
No doubt, no doubt. So before we wrap it up, we do have to do best bets and bargain bin special of the night. If you have no bargain bin special of the night, Jeremy, which is a +300 player prop or better, you can pass. No problem with that. You'll have a few minutes because I got to do the business here and the promotions and the ads. So you got a couple minutes to pick one. if you like, for the bargain bin, plus 300 or better player prop. In the meantime, we want to remind you that we have another exclusive Patreon Ice Guys live betcast Tuesday night during the games, April 30th, 7 p.m. Eastern time. It is a Patreon exclusive betcast, which means the only way to tune in and join us on the betcast is to sign up for just $10 per month, patreon.com/iceguys. Again, just $10 per month. Access to our betcasts, goalie charts, totals charts, player props, and more. Make sure you sign up, patreon.com/iceguys, just $10 per month. And again, 15% off at the Ice Guys store. 2 days left for that. 15% off at the Ice Guys store. Get your gear and your merch there at iceguys.myspreadshop.com. All right, bargain bin special of the night and best bets coming up in just a moment right after we hear from our great sponsors. All right, Boston and Pink, make sure you check them out. Get 20% off all orders on the site using the promo code ICEGUYS at bostonhempinc.com. All right, bargain bin special of the night, the first one ever from our guest, Jeremy Williams, if he's got one. Do you have one? Did you find something in the bargain bin that you ended up liking?
I got one. I think it's a nice one. I got to go with Evander Kane over 0.5 assists. He's going to have an assist tonight. I think it's pretty easy.
There you go. Evander Kane to get an assist here for the Edmonton Oilers. And you're right. That was a great job by Chris Knobloch moving him up the lineup. It paid off in spades. There's no question about that. And great job moving him up the lineup. So Evander Kane to get an assist, bargain bin special for Jeremy Williams. My bargain bin special of the night here in a desperation spot. Look, the over 1.5 points ended up going well. I'm tempted to try another one here tonight. We'll have to wait and see on it. I'm going to go to, let me just see here. I'm trying to see if it actually is bargain bin worthy, the price. I believe it should be. Yeah, I'm going to go with it here. For the Winnipeg Jets, he's been close. I think today's maybe the day. It's around the same price as yesterday with Wyatt Johnston. For the Dallas Stars, Gabe Vilardi in this game coming up plus 475 over 1.5 points. Gabe Vilardi, man, I think today could be that day where things come together for him offensively in a game the Jets pretty much need to have. So Gabe Vilardi over 1.5 points, plus 475 for my bargain bin special of the night. Oh, Adam C. Yes, as far as the email, you can email either me, bobano350@gmail.com. Or we have the Ice Guys email as well, nhliceguys@gmail.com. So again, nhliceguys@gmail.com. You can email us at either my personal email or that one. All right, best bets to wrap up this show. Jeremy, what have you got for best bet?
Best bet?
Yeah. Whatever you like most.
I like, you know what, in all honesty, I like MacKinnon to score a goal. I think he's so electric. I like that right there.
All right, Nathan MacKinnon, always potential, obviously, to find the back of the net, no question about it. Nathan MacKinnon to score a goal, that is going to be the best bet. Colorado Avalanche, best bet for Jeremy Williams. My best bet for this Sunday card, you know, I almost went with this parlay Friday for best bet. I went with the Jets team total instead, and it didn't come through. Jets team total is pretty pricey. I think they do go over the 2.5 that they didn't on Friday night because of a scoreless third period for them. But I'm going to go to what I like the most, and I'm going to go to that two-game parlay that cashed for me on Friday night in these two games. I'm going right back to it here tonight. That's Winnipeg, Colorado, over 5.5, and Edmonton, Los Angeles, over 5.5, plus 142. Very good price with that, plus money. Avs, Jets, over 5.5. Oilers, Kings, over 5.5. Two-game parlay. Don't do parlays hardly at all for best bet, but I'm making an exception today. Plus 142 for that. Avs, Jets, over 5.5. Oilers, Kings, over 5.5 parlay for my best bet here for this Sunday slate. And Alex's best bet, Nashville, minus 130 against Vancouver. Great stuff from our guest, Jeremy Williams. Been a hell of a lot of fun. We'll have to get him back on the show again down the road for sure. You'd want to come back, right?
100%.
Good stuff indeed. All right. Awesome work, Jeremy. Great stuff. Shout out to everyone in the chat. Hit the like button on the way out. A reminder, the Ice Guys is live 7 days a week, Monday to Friday, 2 p.m. Eastern, Saturday and Sunday, noon Eastern. If you can't watch the show live, download the Ice Guys podcast in audio form on all major podcast platforms. For Jeremy Williams, I'm Ian Cameron. Have a great Sunday. Enjoy the games and good luck. And we will be back with you tomorrow on Monday for another edition of the Ice Guys.